Let me repeat what I said before, since some more people came in. Don't move anything on the setups today so that you can see it properly. So if you have something sitting where you normally sit, just don't mess with it. As far as what we're doing today, pretty easy procedure. You basically just have to look at a bunch of stuff. Probably the hardest thing is just doing the math that you have to do after you get your results, but you don't even have to do that here, technically. So it's observation of atomic emissions, and so we're dealing with light today, and light is electromagnetic energy, right? Electromagnetic energy has both wave-like properties and particle-like properties. If you think of it as particles, as little packets of energy, what are we talking about?
Photons,
exactly. And if you think about it as having wave-like particles, you can describe a light wave just like any other wave. Any wave has a frequency and a wavelength, right? And an amplitude. But the frequency and the wavelength are inverses of each other. The wavelength is how long a single wave is. So a wavelength is, as the name implies, a length or a distance. And the frequency is how many waves pass a point in a given amount of time. Well, all light is the same speed, right? Speed of light is a constant. But there are different colors of light that depend on the wavelengths. And that's why you'll have different observations today, because your eyes will respond to different wavelengths of light by giving you the perception of different colors. Of course, the light itself is not colored. The color is an event that's occurring in your brain in response to that energy of light interacting with your retina. But anyway, what does this have to do with atoms and how light interacts with atoms? Well, light is energy. And when an atom is energized, what happens to it? What part of the atom is going to be affected?
The electrons.
The electrons, exactly. So electrons, any given electron, we don't know with accuracy exactly where an electron is around the nucleus at any given moment, right? All we know is that it occurs somewhere with a certain probability. And what do we call those spaces in which electrons can occur around the nucleus? Orbitals is a correct answer. So is shells. So is subshells. There's actually three different spaces. There's a space within a space within a space. An orbital is a space that can hold at most two electrons, right? That space is contained within a space called a subshell, which is contained within a shell. What's another name for a shell? No, orbitals are bigger than shells because a shell can contain more than one orbital. Another name for a shell is an energy level. And that's a good name because it tells you that electrons that occupy different shells have different energy associated with them. Well, electrons that are closest to the nucleus are most stable and therefore least energetic. They're attracted to the nucleus, so it takes some energy to move them farther away from the nucleus, just like it takes energy to undo gravity and move something farther away from the center of the Earth. But for different reasons, of course. Well, there's a discreteness to the way that electrons can occupy levels. An electron can't be just anywhere. It can't be between levels. It has to be in one level or another. And this is kind of analogous to a ball falling downstairs. You can try that as many times as you want. That ball is never going to land between two steps, right? It's going to land on one step definitely or another step. And therefore, electrons have to occupy one level or another. Well, when electrons move up a level or more, it takes energy to do that, and therefore that happens in an energized atom. Energy can't be created or destroyed, right? What tells you that? The first law of thermodynamics, which is also known as the law of conservation of energy. So the energy that it takes to energize an atom goes into lifting that electron to a higher level. That's an unstable condition, and therefore it doesn't last very long, and the electron can quickly come back down to the more stable, closer level that it was previously occupying. If it does that, that would represent a loss of energy if that's all that happened. That's impossible, right? Energy can't be destroyed either. So when the electron comes back down to a lower level, a photon, a brand new photon of light is created that contains the energy that is lost by that electron. So it's not destroyed. And that photon is what comes off of whatever material is being excited, and that therefore what you see. It enters your eye and you have the sensation of whatever color, depending on what the wavelength is for that photon. So that's the basis of today, and it's basically just looking at colors and making notes, but also it's understanding the mathematical relationship between energy, wavelength, speed of light, and the way those are set up in your equations. So all the things that, like I said, that are set up for you, you shouldn't just when you turn on the power switch for these black boxes, it's on the right bottom, just do it very carefully so that you don't move the box at all. When you kind of, it's easy to just hit the switch, but if you do that, you'll move the whole black box. So do it without moving anything, and you shouldn't have to make any readjustments. But when you look through these spectrometers, there's two ways you can look through them. You can look directly at the light source that is shining into the scope, but to actually get your results, you need to look to the side, where you'll see a little spectrum, and then you'll see various lines within that spectrum, and it should look like just one of the color pictures that are at each demo. All right, so make sure you're looking at the right place when you look at those. You should see definite lines. When you do your handheld ones, that's just these ones, much cheaper, but they do the job. On this too, you want to look in it, point it directly to the kind of light that you're looking at, but then look to the side, either to the right or to the left, depending on how you hold it, to see the scale. You'll see what I mean. Stuff that's done in the hood is already set up. Just don't cross-contaminate. Use a wire loop for only that kind of material. Whoever lights the burner first can just leave it lit for the other people. But it's pretty straightforward, so just go ahead and start.